5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way.
Right, it's Tuesday, the second day of the work week. All right, y'all got Monday out the way, so now we rolling on Tuesday. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Woo, Lord, Lord, Lord. All right, welcome to Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Mr. Talk. And yes. Another good show planned for you today, y'all. Another good show planned for you today. We're talking Mr. W.E.B. Du Bois. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're about to have us some fun. Oh, yeah. Man, I'm telling you, what a great day. What a great day. And all blessings. All y'all out there who's tuning in to listen to the show today, and to you, your families, and your extended families, and many blessings, okay? All right, that's what we're talking about. Oh, man, I am feeling wonderful, wonderful, you know? Ha, 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 woo, great, great, great way of being here today. All right, once again, this is Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Mr. Talk, with my co-host, Cloud Nation Radio, a.k.a. Akeem in the house. And we got some things for you today. We got it for you today. So I hope y'all ready and prepared. Now, if you want to be a part of the show today, you want to be heard live, no problem. Just give us a call, 347-838-8622. You can email me, ericletstalk@gmail.com. You can hit me up on Facebook, Let's Talk with Eric Jackson at Facebook.com. I'm also on Twitter, y'all, Driven4FRLife62 at Twitter.com. All right, so that's where we are. That's how you get to it. But if you want to be in the chat room and participate in the conversation, you can do that too. All you got to do is go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Mr. Talk. Now, you can log in just on the Blog Talk website and come in as a guest. And the only thing you'll be able to do is watch as everybody comment and respond to the conversation in the chat room. However, if you want to be a participant in the chat room, just log on whatever your social media site is and come on into the chat room. And, man, I'm telling you, then you'll be able to participate, respond, and have some fun in the chat room with everybody. The conversation in the chat room is always, you know, interesting, to say the least. And a lot of times they have many topics going, many topics going on besides what we're talking about. And they all gravitate together. So, you know, if you want to be a part of that conversation, then you're more than welcome. We welcome everybody's opinion, and we love to have you on the show. That we do. We just ask that you come in and act accordingly, and, you know, as the adult that you are. If you're not an adult, try and find how you can act like one, okay? We don't do any personal attacks. We don't do any derogatory terms on this show. We respect each other. And all in all, we try and promote that thing called togetherness. Togetherness. You know, we as black people, we have a hard time with that sometimes, you know. But don't get it twisted. I understand that a lot of people, you know, your opinions, and a lot of opinions are not going to be those of others. We understand that. And, you know, we take that into account. However, you can state it, you know, without being mean or nasty or just downright ignorant. Yes, that's right. I said ignorant. I didn't say ignorant, as some of you well-educated individuals would love for me to say. I'm going to call it like I see it. Don't be ignorant, okay? You know, I'm gonna have to start making this a part of the rule when I say the rules on a daily basis. Also, for those that like to call in and play games, this is not your game format right here. Okay, you find somebody else to go and play the games with. All right, just remember, I tell y'all this all the time, and I think y'all think I be playing. Y'all have this inclination that I be playing, but I'm quite serious. I'm not scared of you. Okay. Let me go on and put that out there right now, and so it's understood. I'm not scared of you at all. Okay, I'm not. So if you want to play, make sure, you know, let's have the understanding that you started it, but I will finish it. Okay, I'm not scared of none of you. Okay, so for all you so-called narcissists and great philosophers and everybody that's just think you up in the stratosphere above everyone else, yeah. Woo! You better watch out. You better watch out. You know, that goes back to what the lady we had on the show yesterday, we talked about on the show, Nanny Helen Burroughs, you know, ain't that what she said? Isn't that what she said, y'all? Isn't that what she said? Huh? What she said? Come on, you know, sometimes we just got to come down from the air we in. Yeah. Oh, Butthurt 25 said, who are you talking about? I'm not talking about anyone. If it don't pertain to you, you don't need to be asking. See? I'm telling you, ain't that what they say? The guilty and usually the most ones to speak up. Woo! Boy, talking about flushing out a rat. Ooh, look out now. That's right. Anyway, so those are the rules of the show. Hope everybody, you know, really go ahead and handle it, all right? All right, so that's all we're going to be saying about that. All right, well, also, yesterday we had a great show, man. We talked about Nanny Helen Burroughs, man, and the wonderful things this lady did. And she happened to be a cousin of one of my chat room coordinator, one of my faithful listeners, Miss Antoinette. And I want to thank her for the information that she did share with us about Mrs. Burroughs, because it was a great to have someone on the show that had I guess you can say secondhand experience, you know, from stories that was told. So I just love it, and I want to say thank you for sharing that information with us, because it was wonderful. All right, so I'm having fun, y'all. I don't know about y'all. I'm having fun, you know. Yesterday I did get a little touchy. And you know what? I'm not going to apologize for that, because sometimes I need to get touchy, because y'all take my kindness for weakness sometimes. And don't get it twisted. I'm a feral individual. I am. I try and you know, accommodate everyone. But don't go there with me, okay? Like I said earlier, I'm not scared of you. Now, I may let you go a little bit, but let's keep it in contact here, you know? Let's keep it. You know, don't play. Don't play, all right? Keep your game somewhere. Take your game somewhere else, because this is not the game show network. Woo! Boy, I tell you. Anyway, so You know, I had a vision on that, so I had to put it out there. I did have to put it out there. You know, this is not the Game Show Network. So all you little rats and roaches that want to come creeping around out of the dark and run when the lights come on, I'm just putting it out there already. I'm stomping you out. I'm spraying your way, and I'm praying your way. So if this pertains to you, woohoo! It's going to happen. All right, all right, all right. Enough of that. Enough of that. I'm going to put it out there. And I'm not taking it back. I'm not. So it is what it is. And I hope y'all understand, you know, what I'm saying. You know, you see what I'm saying? Now, all right. So anyway, so let me bring my man in here. And I know he's ready for today's show because he is always ready for the show. You know, I'm telling you. I'm just speechless when I think of this young man. You know, he almost on the level of someone I hold dear. That's a dear friend. You know, she pops in and out, but you know, he brings it, man. He really does. He really does. So without further ado, man, let me bring my co-host in, Mr. Hakeem, aka Cloud Nation Radio. What's going on, man? How you doing today?
Oh man, excited about part two, of course. I see we have some amazing information to really pour from. So I'm very, very, very excited to talk about the continuation of you know, talking about these amazing people who happen to be connected. W.E.B. Du Bois happens to be connected to Sister Burroughs. And I'm excited about how that's going to come out in our discussion today.
And, boy, you know what? You said a whole lot, Denny. You are absolutely right, you know. that's why I arranged it the way I did, you know what I mean? So we can connect them all together. Yeah, you know, man, I'm telling you. You're on point, man. You got it. You there with me. Woo, Lord Hammer. So how you feeling today?
Oh man, I feel smoother than a Breyers ice cream cone, I think, right now.
Hey, I'm telling you, man, it just woo, just a great thing, great thing, great thing. That's all I'm gonna say. It's a great thing. Hey, it's great to feel wonderful. I'm telling you, you know, in my meditation before I came on the air. You know, I had to thank the Lord, man. I'm not going to lie, because I had to tell him, you know, some people woke up ill this morning, but you know what? He didn't have to wake them up at all. So that was a blessing in itself. So, you know, whoo-hoo, a great thing, great thing. So that's what I'm saying. Blessings and peace to everyone out there, you know. Even if you make me mad, blessings and peace to you. I still love you. You know, sometimes you got to get that spank, or hell, you got to get that whipping in. I'm not going to call it no spank. You got to get that whipping in, you know, to get you back on track. That's all. You know what I'm talking about, Hakeem. Well, you may not know, but I know it. Some of y'all out there know what I'm talking about. All right. Anyway. So, everybody, y'all ready for a show? Because we are ready to bring you one outstanding show today. Of course, we got the song of the day coming up, and we got an old a classic for you. You know, it is summertime, so, you know, you got to bring out some of them summertime songs. And so, you see, go on to get your coffee and get your afternoon cocktail, your glass of wine, and a whole bunch of other things. And you know, make sure you're ready, because when we come back, man, we're going to kick off with a story, a continuation of a story we spoke about yesterday, because there has been a very unusual, another twist in this story that we were speaking about. Then, of course, we come back with our shout outs, and then we're going to roll right on into the show. All right. So without further ado, man, here it is. Fresh Prince and DJ Jazzy Jeff, a.k.a. Will Smith, with Summertime.
Drum.
Here
from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past. Adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme, and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime. Checking out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly, we be out in the park. A place called the Plateau is where everybody goes. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise. Honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turned around to see what you beeping at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hip you and to get you equipped for the summertime. Yet, hustle to the mall to get me a short set. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair, cause basketball courts in the summer got girls there. The temperature's about 88. Hop in the water plug, just for old time's sake. Break to your crib, change your clothes once more, cause you're invited to a barbecue to start at 4. Sitting with your friends, as y'all reminisce about the days growing up and the first person you kissed. And as I think back, makes me wonder how the smell from a grill can spark up nostalgia. All the kids playing out front, little boys messing around with the girls playing double dutch. While the DJ spinning a tune as the old folks dance at your family reunion. Then 6 o'clock rolls around, you just finished wiping your car down. It's time to cruise, so you go to the summertime hangout. It looks like a car show. Everybody come looking real fine, fresh from the barbershop or fly from the beauty salon. Every moment frontin' and maxin', chillin' in the car, they spend all day waxin', leanin' to the side, but you can't speed through 2 miles an hour, so everybody sees you. There's an air of love and of happiness, and this is the Fresh Prince's new definition of summer madness.
All right, y'all, man. There it was, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, also known as Will Smith, the big-time movie star now. Yeah, that's before he got into movies, y'all, pretty much. But, hey, that's what I'm talking about right there. Now, that's the way to start. Man, you know what? It's amazing. Because that smooth, that groove right there is still smooth. It is. I'm like, yeah. I was sitting back here reminiscing myself how we do that. Man, got the little escort together, you know, and with the boom in it and just riding up and down, you know, riding. Yeah, you know, with your head hanging to the right, you know, on the console and just chilling, just riding. Oh, my goodness. Woo! Man. No, some of them songs just bring back memories. I tell you, you just can't. Woo, man, I'm telling you, that's all got me hyped because I just had to remember. Woo, Lord, I was something terrible back then. Oh, man, it's amazing how age helps you and brings you back to where you knew you're supposed to be. All right? All right. Well, let's see. Time for the shout-outs. And who do we have on the switchboard? Of course, we got Mr. P. Yankee. We got the anonymous 111. And, of course, we got my other half, the very beautiful Mrs. Talk on the Line, who I love to death. Hey, babe. And, you know, it does everybody on the switchboard. Welcome to the show, y'all. And in the chat room, we got, of course, my chat room coordinator, the sweet Antoinette. And then we got H2O in the house. We got Divine Design Guest 1346. And, of course, we got C. Daddy in the house also. Woo! Welcome, y'all. And of course, I want to welcome everybody else out there listening on your different to life. All right, Antoinette, you messed up my thought process. I'm sorry. You're right. I love her to life, not to death. Okay. Woohoo! Okay. Antoinette, correct me, y'all. I love Mrs. Talk to life, not to death, okay? All right. And, man, everybody else out there listening on your different devices, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're out there and you're supporting the show. Anybody else who just be listening want to call in and just listen on your phone or call in and speak live, no problem. Just give us a call, 347-838-8622. You can email me, ericletstalk@gmail.com. You also can join us in the chat room, www.blogtalkradio.com/Mr. Talk. Get in the chat room and join the conversation there as well. We all, you know, my co-host, I'm telling you, he's always posting information there that and that's very informative. So I encourage you to, you know, just drop by and take a look. Of course, I'm posting things, you know, off and on also. And then just the rest of the chat room, the conversation is just off the chain. That's all I'm going to have to say. And, of course, you know, we got the switchboard. And you can email me, ericletstalk@gmail.com. I think I said that already. And I got Twitter, y'all. I got the Twitter, Driven4Life62. That's 4, F-O-R, okay? Driven4, F-O-R, Life62 at Twitter. And, you know, that's the, you can follow me there also. And, of course, there's the Facebook page, Let's Talk with Eric Jackson at Facebook.com. Those are all the ways you can follow me. And we green and we good. And let's make this stuff happen. Man, I'm telling you, I'm always rock. Boy, I'm rocking and rolling before I. Have your mind ever go so fast, man, that your mouth can't keep up? you be trying to get one. You've been gone 800 miles, and your mind be going somewhere. Your mouth trying to keep up, and your mind already on a whole nother topic. Well, that's a bad thing sometimes. It is. You know, I have to slow it down a little bit. Oh, Lord, have mercy. All right, y'all. I'm going to get it together here. I'm going to get it together. All right. So those are all the ways you participate on the show. And as I said, we welcome everyone. So, you know, if you want to call in, call in. If you want to join the chat room, do it. Send me emails, what have you. Hey, we green. All right. Comments, you know, suggestions. Hey, we accept them all. All right. We accept them all. So there's a story that I talked about yesterday that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And every time I turn around and I'm just searching, I'm not looking for anything in particular, this story always pops up. Now, remember I told y'all about the Sudan woman that was released from prison yesterday because she married an American Christian and her dad was a Muslim, but he left when she was 4 years old. But her mom was an Orthodox Christian, so she claimed Christian as her religion. Well, in the Sudan, this town in Sudan, they ruled that no, she was a Muslim and she couldn't marry a Christian guy. They called it apostasy, and they had sentenced her to 40 lashes. And hanged to be hung by death. Now, her family also said if the courts released her, they would carry out the death sentence themselves. That's some family for you, isn't it? But anyway, so yesterday they released her, and come to find out, they released her due to international pressure. I did find that a little bit out. Well, and remember I said yesterday, if I was her, I would leave the country? Well, She was arrested yesterday in the airport with her American husband trying to leave the country. I know it's not funny, but it's just oh, Lord. It's just the thought of it. I just mentioned it, and now, you know, I look through the news, and it's there. She was arrested yesterday trying to leave the country with her husband. Why? 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 So, you know, as I said before, you know, we'll keep you abreast of what's happening with that, because it's really interesting. You know, she was picked up by what these people are, I guess they're like the Secret Service in our country. They are the National Intelligence and Security Service, better known as the NISS. So I guess that's a Sudanese group. They're supposed to be very powerful, and that's who she got picked up by. And no word on what kids are. So we'll keep you abreast on that, because I think that's that's going to be interesting to watch how that works there. You know, they released her for the because of international pressure. However, you know, there's a lot of Muslim groups that are actually lobbying them to carry out the sentence. I don't know. Maybe they found another loophole to where they can hold her and give her the lashes or something. Because as of right now, she hasn't been given any punishment whatsoever, because at the time she was pregnant, and I think 2 weeks after she was sentenced, she went to prison. She had a baby. So it's going to be we'll see what's going on with that. All right. So that's what's going on with that story. I'm sure between me and my co-host, and of course Antoinette, because Antoinette keep me up on a lot of things. Also, we'll stay on top of it for you. All right, now, let's see, what else is there to speak about? That basically was it, because nothing else is really happening. Of course, we know what's going on in Iraq, and John Kerry finally came out and said it. You know, really, it's not going to do us any good to go over there and fight nobody. I mean, drop air support on anybody, because, you know, it's just going to keep going. I'm glad he finally sat up there and told the truth about that. So, you know, stay out of the. We need to stay out of Iraq. That's all I'm going to say. We need to stay the heck out of Iraq. And if we stay out of Iraq, everything will be okay. They'll work that out. You know, they'll work that out. And let's see. I think that's it. That's it. That's it. That's it. That's it. That's it. You know, I didn't really have too much other stuff to talk about today, because I want to go on and get on with W.E.B. Du Bois, because we have so much to talk about when we get into this guy right here. And, you know, it's good. See, Daddy says the result of it all, this is going to be Iraq split into three parts. You know what, See, Daddy? And I think that's how they were split in the beginning, till we decided to go over there and try and make them a democracy and turn them all in one. I think that's how they were in the beginning. So it's amazing. It's amazing. It is. You know, something we call ourselves liberating them from, they headed right back in that direction. So it's just amazing. That's all I can say about that thing. You know, it is. It's amazing, because three different groups, you know, want to go ahead and control their part. And I think the other part is that the so-called prime minister, you know, the prime minister is not one of the most reliable and people with integrity. So I think that's part of probably the issue also. So let them go on back to the building the way they were, and everything will be okay. Yeah, I mean, it's just that simple. You know, it's just that simple. Yeah, let them handle it. It's their business. All right, so. I think I've said enough now. So what I'm about to do now is I'm going to bring my co-host in and let him start off the show about Mr. W.E.B. Du Bois. I'm going to check the phone lines here for a moment. All right. Cloud Nation Radio, are you ready, man? You ready to speak?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right.
The floor
I have
is yours.
Absolutely no. Okay. I have absolutely no problem with discussing Mr. William Edward Burghardt, Du Bois. You could say Du Bois, you could say Du Bois, however you like to say it. He is the and was the preeminent scholar. He's a giant throughout the history of intellectual collective, and his influence is colossal, as I was saying yesterday. His contribution to the history and to history as a whole and the history of Africans in the Americas in general, he is the rite of passage to any aspiring intellectual or scholar who must wrestle with the Du Bois ideas at some point in their life. His legacy as an activist is paramount in areas such as the NAACP, and his influence on the beginnings of the Pan-African movement are notable. So as I said, his accomplishments during his 95-year tenure on Earth are too numerous to capture, too paramount to try to measure in one setting. I mean, Du Bois is also the preeminent example that the faulty notion that black people are inferior is beyond ignorant. He set the example in that he challenged every single stereotype of black people, rising from beyond people's expectations in general, doing what may have seemed impossible for many human beings, let alone a black person in the Americas during that time. And he continued to challenge the notice and continue to take notice and challenge the notice that a black person is not only inferior, but he inspired others to do the same. And most of his research was exactly that, how we could actually get empirical proof of, in fact, making this exact point. As I said before, he highlighted the foundation in which Lady Liberty stands on and the luminous light that stands above her shoulders, and that torch that we talk about in Lady Liberty, and he recognized and captured and opened the window to the significance of American blacks and their contribution to the Americas as a whole today. I mean, this guy is just dynamic. He's dynamic, I have to say. And, he did so many things. I mean, his accomplishments, like I said, is so numerous. We know that, when you question, when the question is raised, who is W.E. Du Bois, it's easy to accept sketches of information that box in an attempt to simplify the complexity of Du Bois in his 95 years tenure on the earth. Yes, he is the author of The Souls of Black Folk, 1935 magnum opus, Black Reconstruction in America, which he published, three autobiographies, each of which definitely contain a lot of insightful essays on sociology, on politics, and history. His connection to Sister Burroughs is as editor of the NAACP's journal, The Crisis, where he published many, many influential and significant timely pieces. And he was an excellent, and I mean excellent, he was a very amazing author. In 1895, he became the first African-American to earn a PhD from Harvard University. He co-founded the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People in 1909. He laid down the foundation for the first case study on an African-American community in the Philadelphia Negro. It was called the A Social Study, 1899, marking the beginnings of his expansive, and I do mean expansive, writing career. In the study, he coined the phrase the talented 10, a term that he used to describe the likelihood of 1 in 10 black men becoming leaders of their race. In 1903, Du Bois published his seminal work, The Souls of Black Folk, a collective of 14 essays I mean, he had essays, poetry, fiction, amazing writer. In the aftermath of the 1906 violence, Du Bois also urged blacks to withdraw their support from the Republican Party because Republicans such as Roosevelt and William Howard Taft did not support blacks. And most African Americans have been loyal to the Republican Party since the time of Abraham Lincoln. And Du Bois wrote the essay, A Litany at Atlanta, which asserted that the riot demonstrated that Atlanta comprised or compromise was a failure because despite upholding the end of the bargain, blacks had failed to receive legal justice. In addition to writing editorials, Du Bois also continued to produce scholarly work at Atlanta University. In 1909, after 5 years of effort, he published a biography of John Brown. It contained many insights, but it also contained some factual errors. And the work was strongly criticized by The Nation, which was owned by Oswald Villard, and also an author who was writing a competing biography of John Brown at the time. Du Bois' work was largely ignored by white scholars. After he published a piece in the Collier's magazine warning of the end of white supremacy, he had difficulty getting pieces accepted by major periodicals. However, he continued to publish columns regularly in the Horizon magazine. Along with the NAACP leaders, they offered Du Bois the position of Director of Publicity and Research. He accepted a job in the summer of 1910, and he moved to New York after resigning from Atlanta University. There, his primary duty was editing NAACP's monthly magazine, which he named The Crisis. Now, you guys remember that name, The Crisis, because we talked about Sister Burroughs' contribution and also her position as a leader and editor also at the exact same journal. The first issue appeared in November 1910, and Du Bois pronounced that his aim was basically to set out those facts and arguments which show the danger of race prejudice, particularly as manifested today during that time, at the current date, toward colored people, as he stated. He also, the journal was phenomenally successful, and its circulation at the time would reach 100,000 in 1920. Du Bois' papers would later evolve into his groundbreaking 1935 book, which is Black Reconstruction. The AHA did not invite another African American speaker again until 1940, but in 1910. It was a productive time for Du Bois. You know, in 1911, he also attended the first Universal Racist Congress in London, and he published his first novel, The Quest of the Silver Fleece. 2 years later, Du Bois also wrote, produced, and directed a pageant for the stage, The Star of Ethiopia. In 1915, Du Bois published The Negro, A General History of the Black Africans, and the first of its kind in English. The book rebutted claims of African inferiority and would come to serve as the basis of much Afrocentric historiography. I'm sorry, I'm reading some of this. In the 20th century. And the Negro predicted unity and solidarity for colored people around the world, and it influenced many who supported the Pan-African movement. In 1915, Atlantic Monthly carried an essay by Du Bois, The African Roots of the War, which consolidated Du Bois' ideas on capitalism and race. In it, he argued that the scramble for Africa was at the root of the World War One. He also anticipated later communist doctrine by suggesting that wealthy capitalists had pacified white workers by giving them just enough wealth to prevent them from revolting, and by threatening them with competition by the lower cost labor of colored workers. Wow, it's a lot of stuff, man. He's an amazing, phenomenal guy.
Wow. You know what? Oh, man, I tell you, that was a whole lot of information you dropped real fast. I mean, real fast. I hope y'all got some of that, man, because, you know, when you talk of W.E.B. Du Bois, man, I mean, you know, the first thing that does come to mind is the NAACP, you know, because he is the founder. And if you take a look at the NAACP, what it was supposed to mean then and how it's operated today, you know, there's a big difference between the two, you know, what was meant and how it is operated today. Now, there has been some scuttlebutt, I guess you can say, or some historians that claim that, you know, there was a little bit of corruption and, you know, deceivery during this time, during the NAACP. Also, that you know, W.E. Du Bois, he basically, you know, was just a figurehead, and the NAACP was actually run by whites during that time. So, I mean, sometimes it sounds a little different, but if you look at it, a lot of times it's still the same. You know what I mean? But let's talk about some of his philosophies that some people disagree with back during the time, and I'm sure some of them would disagree with also in today's time. And that's the philosophy, what was it, that he believed that agitating for the ballot was necessary, but he opposed basically giving the vote to the uneducated blacks. And he also believed that economic gains were not secure unless there was political power to safeguard them. Now, the second one, about the political power, I really don't have anything, because that makes sense. We see that today. You know, if you don't have no representation, no resources, whatever, you can do what you want to, but you're not getting any, you know, you won't have anything to back up what you want to do. But let's get back to the part, but oppose giving the vote to the uneducated blacks. Now, why would you not want to give voting power to uneducated blacks? You know, I know here on the show a lot of times we say the American voter is so uneducated and unfamiliar with what's going on, you can get anything around. But back during that time, it was a lot of the so-called activists back then actually pushed for complete voting power for everyone. So why would he go and say, okay, let's just give voting rights to the educated people, and as far as the uneducated, we'll just lead them out of the dark. So wasn't he part of, was he part of the plan? I mean, the problem also, you know? So those are questions I'm putting out there. And what I'm going to do right now, I'm going to bring Pianki and Michael in, and we're going to talk about this thing and this man. All right, so welcome to the show, Pianki, and welcome to the show, Michael. How y'all doing today?
Hi.
Okay. Michael, you there? All right, I guess Michael has got himself muted.
Yeah, you hear me? Yeah, I have myself on mute. I was doing something in the background.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we got you. So welcome to the show. All right, so did y'all hear the question I posed? What's wrong with my loud mouth?
Yes, yes. You want to go first, Pianki? I hear echo, Mr. Talk.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I don't, you're right about that. I really don't, I understand with Du Bois. I really don't like Du Bois and his approach. I understand, you know, the talent of 10. That just separating the 10 people out of your group, black people, you don't do that. That's why people think they're better than somebody else. He's talking about an uneducated voter. No, you can, your family, when you sit down at the table, you can have talk about politics at the dinner room table. What is he talking about? The Constitution says you can't discriminate nobody. They had to make an amendment to that. He had this approach that you got this talented 10 stuff. Someone has to be better, this classical intellectual. Well, right now in our society, people who are plumbers, electricians, who can get their hands dirty, they are not without a job. These quote-unquote white scholar jobs are, you know, they're the ones that's getting pushed for. So having a trade and knowing how to get your hands dirty and taking something from the raw earth and creating it, I think that's good. I think that's an intellectual too. And he just thought that he was – I just didn't like his attitude. I don't like his philosophy. And like I said before, you can hear some people who have that talented 10 attitude today. They think they're better. They don't want to listen to nobody. They don't want to give back to their community. They may have come from a bad area growing up. Now they're part of the Tower to Ten. They don't want to go and give back to the communities because of that attitude. His attitude with his mindset is crazy. I'm not saying that we're not going to have, for instance, a professor at a college making $200,000 a year. To me, in my life, he's no better than a mechanic who owns his business that has five employees, black employees, getting their hand job. He's no smart. To me, they're no smarter. They give to this world. Both of them have their own intelligence, and their own intelligence is helping us. So, but when you have this Tower to Ten stuff, you're taking somebody and separating and saying, I'm better than the other 90%. That's the problem of the world. What type of attitudes those 10 have? They're going to act like they're God. They're going to act like they're better than somebody else. So I think we should have, back then, of course, looking now, I think we should have took both approaches. But you can see his philosophy when he's talking about the uneducated Negro not voting for somebody. Listen, you can vote. You can vote for a president if you like his speech, if you like the way his ties wear. You can vote for a person any way you want to because that's your vote. That's your opinion. That's all I wanted to say so far.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir, for that. Pianki?
Well, I was just listening. Bring somebody else in.
What? Okay. All right. Well, there is no one else. Okay, so it's just us. Hakeem, you got anything you would like to add before
Sure. First, I wanted to greet the brothers. I wanted to greet Brother Pianki and Brother Michael and say hello. I didn't formally greet them, so I wanted to do it properly. And it's interesting. Being Du Bois is definitely he's an interesting read. You know, Du Bois or Du Bois, however you like to say it. You know, he proved in the span of his life, you know, that black folks are at least as good as everyone else. And one of the most recent and comprehensive biographies on Du Bois was actually published by David Levin Lewis. And Du Bois is often quoted on his statement that the problem of the 20th century was the problem of the color line. His biographer, David Levin Lewis, said that the problem for him was dealing with the complexity of W.E.B. Du Bois, not just the complexity of his thoughts, but the complexity of his activities and activism. Without question, Du Bois personifies that complexity of American blacks' thoughts. Oftentimes, you know, we have a tendency to oversimplify intellectuals who are American blacks, to freeze them in time and box them into certain categories or pigeonhole them in certain categories. But it's very difficult to do that with someone like Du Bois. You know, his range of ideas, his range of activities, and just the sheer length of his lifespan alone reminds us that we must take all intellectuals seriously, including American blacks. We have to deal with the complexity of their thought, just as we would deal with the complexity of any other intellectual the world has produced. Now, with Du Bois in particular, his contributions and writings, we have a broader understanding of American history and we're better able to understand not only American history in general, but also American black historical narrative specifically. His various contributions, such as the scientific side of Du Bois, we also have to consider that he was also a brilliant literary writer. He wrote fictional novels in addition to his more empirically rigorous works. I believe Du Bois gives a reflection not only in issues of the color line, but also the tensions that America has wrestled with. You see him wrestling with that throughout his works, in which the growth of America is captured in a period in which Du Bois saw immigrants from Western Europe coming, and noticing how they were trying to adapt many of the racist views of whites in America at the time. These are things I think you can make a parallel even today with some of the uncertainties or uneasiness that some Americans may have with the shifting demographics in America. So there were many parallels in Du Bois' work, and also even with his book, The Souls of Black Folk, he tries to you know, tie into the strength of the soul and the spirit in reference to American blacks, but you get this reflection of America in general.
All right. The reflection of America in general. Wow. You know, back in the day, a lot of individuals felt that W.E. Du Bois was actually confrontational, and many of those that didn't advocate for the confrontational method that he used often, I guess you can say, shunned him or spoke out against him. Now, him and the guy we'll be talking about tomorrow, Booker T. Washington, often bumped heads on several issues, which I say we'll get more into tomorrow as we talk about Booker T. Washington. But also one of the things about, you know, he attacked Washington. He believed, you know, that you had to go out of Washington because he felt that they accepted racial segregation. You know, and he also, you know, he often said that it encouraged, you know, whites to deny African Americans the right to vote and to undermine black pride and progress. You know, and he also criticized Washington's Tuskegee approach as an attempt to educate black boys and girls simply as servants and underlings. Now, if you just go by those right there, and we take it back to yesterday to Mrs. Burroughs as what she taught, young ladies to do as far as to be more than just servants, you know, it kind of goes along with what W.E. Du Bois was saying is, you know, we have more potential just to be servants and you know, butlers and things of that nature, you know, and I think, you know, during that time, those type of individuals were needed, you know, and for him to be the founder of the NAACP. And then later on...
Well, he was one of the founders.
Well, will you listen? Let me talk. Thank you. When I gave you your chance, you didn't want to. So let me talk now. All right? Thank you. Golly, knucklehead. Anyway, as I was saying, you know, eventually, you know, he resigned from that because, you know, he felt that the NAACP goal really was racial equality. You know, so, you know, it's a whole lot, you know, and I think to be a successful leader, sometimes you have to be a little complex and a little confrontational, I would think. Now, as far as his talented Tim, you know, that's a very interesting read also, you know, and if you look over it and you go through the times of history, you know, there has always been those that are so-called how can I put it? Those that seem more educated, more academic, more academically, you know. well, hell, they seem smart. That seems to be you know, out there leading that everyone will choose to follow. But then again, you know, on that, you have to be kind of careful because as the talented Tenth has grown, you know, there has become more of a separation between the talented Tenth and the rest of the black community. You know, it's like they're in their own section now, and the rest of the African-American, the black community is, you know, on the bottom looking up at them. And I think, you know, what W.E. Du Bois was saying is, you know, that's fine, but somewhere they have to give back to help raise the rest of the people up to a status to where everyone can be successful. I mean, that's just my opinion, but that's
I wonder what he thinks about. Well, Mr. I wonder what Du Bois thought about Black Wall Street, because Booker T. Washington, I mean, I think Black Wall Street was in his type of scenario because they worked. And I think... when you talk about segregation, I think when we pass, no one has to force you to be around somebody. It's a choice. So if you want to be around whites, you can. If you don't want to be around whites, You can. So, but during that time, Black Wall Street was enacted, and you know when these gentlemen were living. So, which one do you think would consider the Booker T. Washington? What do you think he would think about Black Wall Street? They were on their own. They wasn't with the white man. That's my question to you. What do you think?
He fell off the chair.
I'm sorry, Michael. As far as how he felt about Black Wall Street, that's interesting, Michael. I don't know. You know, I think he probably was proud of it in a certain extent that, you know, they were doing their own thing. You know, they had their own thing going on. You know, they were successful. They were. Now, as far as if you look at the big picture and how they were treated by the white society, I really don't know. Because if you really look at Black Wall Street back then was a very successful successful society, because they actually had something going on overseas. You know, they were doing their own things with very little help, and the white people left them alone. That's basically why they basically attacked Black Wall Street. They were more financially sound than the whites during that period. And, you know, it just took one to complain about it, and next thing you know, it used that as an excuse to go ahead and bomb and destroy Black Wall Street. So once again, they can seem like they are a superior group. That's
right, because Booker T. Washington, because Booker T. Washington, he said we don't have to be around white people or to be around them or have that education to be successful. That was his idea. You know, I'm not saying that we had to. I mean, you can, but you must, or black people must do this. No, he said, no, we can do stuff ourselves. He was talking about self-improvement, so that's why, because now, like I tell my sons, it's me. When you get a certificate or a license in something, in a trade, nothing can stop you. You can start your own business because you know your craft. He was about more of crafts. The intellectual may draw the drawing of blueprints, but you still need that person to do their craft with their hands. So it's skills in every type of thing. I just thought he thought he was better than other blacks. Other blacks that get their hands dirty are not better than one who, you know, behind a desk every day in a tile, you know, this, and quote on intellectual, what is the definition of an intellectual? See, to me, it was just causing division. I think those guys should have came together. We need trades and we need school teachers. We need both together. I don't think none is higher than each other because we all need each other.
Wow.
So, I'm saying, if I got my license, if I got my master plumbing's license, nobody can stop me as a black person because I got a trade. I mean, I may not speak the king's language that well, but my math may be good, but I'm a good plumber. I got my business. I can start it up. So it's a combination of both.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, you have to remember now that, you know, eventually the boys got tired of, became very critical of the U.S. way of the government also, to a point where he actually renounced his American citizenship, you know, and became a citizen of Ghana in Africa, you know. So,
and,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, because I was interrupting you.
No, and there's some reports say he actually joined the Communist Party. So even though Black Wall Street was successful, you know, there's a point to where he became very disillusioned about trying to survive here in the so-called United States of America, to where he just renounced his American citizenship and went to Ghana, which he always was a proponent of Pan-Africanism. So, you know, it was really It was a complex time for what he believed in. And once again, you got to realize that, you know, once you have a belief or a belief of one thing, and you know, you're looking at it from all angles, and it does become complex because in one stage, you want to help. You know, you're giving the advice out. You tell them this is what we need to do. On the other one, you're saying, well, this group here is successful, but it's just that group that's successful because the ones that's up top are not trying to reach down and pull those on the bottom up. Now, I know some say, well, why do that when they're just going to fall back down to the bottom all over again? Well, I think Du Bois was one of those individuals say, well, let's just try it and see what happens. You know, let's get from under this system that we are now that's really keeping us down, basically, and keeping us in a status to where we are not very successful, you know, and keeping us as servants and things of that nature. So I think, you know, after a while, you just became very disillusioned and just said, you know what, I've tried.
But,
or everywhere I go, you know, they're fighting and fighting. You know, hey, look, I'm getting up out of here. I show you better than I can tell you. Remember that old saying we say all the time, I can show you better than I tell you? And that's, you know, and I think that's where he actually ended up. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm through now. Go ahead, Akeem.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say that as we continue to unpack the essence of WEDB Du Bois, I think a lot of uncertainties and unknowns will be revealed, but there's still going to be some things that, you know, that we won't know. So I think you know, the timing of some of our questions are going to be premature in some sense, because some of the answers to some of those questions are forthcoming in some of the unpacking. For example, you know, W.E.B. Du Bois, he definitely made a significant contribution to understanding the American Black historical narrative, particularly when we talk about the role of scholars and leaders. You know, scholars and leaders who not only immerse themselves in social activities and political activism, this is very central when you talk about the American Black experience. And again, I think Du Bois personifies the commitment to using intellectual pursuits and scholarly work to advance humanity and to advance society as a whole. You know, So it's a very remarkable contribution, and it's also a testament to the power of education, the power of ideas, and how influential those ideas can be in a given society. He had a great love for science and a fascination with science, which led to his remarkable academic training. You have a person in essence who could have earned PhDs, including one from Harvard, and basically he had everything he needed while studying in Berlin for a second PhD. So he had been exposed to these cutting-edge methods in terms of scientific research, but it is also his feeling that through rigorous scientific research you could reveal the truth about the American Black experience, and maybe idealistically at the time by mainstream America seeing the truth. But what changed his views was a perspective that he later altered after his years in Atlanta. You know, however, he did feel as though rigorous scientific research would lead to a certain level of enlightenment, to widen other people's eyes in terms of humanness, the humaneness of American Blacks. So there was a certain level of scientific reliance on that. So instead of continuing down the path of sociology in the sciences, he begins to focus more on political activism. So his goal may have been greater human and racial understanding, which he thought would lead to greater racial harmony. He, of course, was committed to American Black upliftment, to American Black struggle, but he was also a humanist. He was also concerned with common working class ordinary people. If the question was ever asked, is his writings relevant to the contemporary American Black today? I would say yes. Essentially, he focused on the question of identity, especially when we focus on the opening essays essays in his book, The Soul for Black Folks, dealing with the double consciousness. How does a black person become both a Negro and American? Finding out who we are in life obviously is a universal question that humanity attempts to answer daily. Who am I and where do I fit in this world? This is one of the central questions Du Bois was constantly challenging, and to not just accept what others say about who you are, but to seek out purpose and know that if you are living, you are here for a significant purpose that supersedes the limited capacity of man-made ideas. In closing, I think it is very important to emphasize that even Du Bois' notion of double consciousness, that he was committed to the preservation of American black culture and the preservation, of American African heritage. I don't think he was at a point where he wanted to abandon American African culture. It was still at the forefront of his academic work. He talked about this in a little-known essay called The Conservation of the Races, where he made the argument that American African culture is a very integral part of American culture as a whole. Even in embracing that Americanness or that American identity, there should still be an emphasis on appreciating and expressing various aspects of the American African culture or what it means to be American today or as a whole.
Right.
Well, you know, both Du Bois and Washington was mulattoes, and they had great influence of their father. And they also, you know, Du Bois with Monroe Trotter, whose father was Monroe Trotter was an advisor to Du Bois, just like Timothy Fortune was an advisor to Washington. And Timothy Fortune's father was Garrison, who was Lloyd Garrison. We should know his history. And if you look at the positions that they took, none of them talked about Africa to a great extent. My favorite of the two was at that time was Marcus Garvey. That'd be someone you talk about later on. But they have different opinions. I mean, blacks are different in the United States. The Bois called the Niagara Movement, which is held in Canada, where you have a group of blacks who came together. You had Washington, who heard of the movement and tried to, sabotage it by not letting the information from the proceeding of the movement go out, because they all had different opinions. Washington was a person who didn't believe in agitating whites, to go ahead and do what you got to do on your own. Whereas Du Bois was just the opposite. So they had differences of opinion. You see that today. But the thing is that they had very strong... Washington's mother was an African slave. She never did identify his father, who they believe was a plantation owner. Du Bois' father was French and Caribbean. His mother was Dutch and African. So a whole lot of things were going on there that had to be considered.
All right. But I want to go back to what you were saying, and I wonder what he would think about the NWC. But you keep on using about what is being an American. We don't even know that. I mean, what is the American culture? I mean, this terminology of identifying blacks as being Americans, what is that concept? Because Americans themselves, they have a trouble of being themselves. If you want to talk about what is the truly being American, how do you want to define it? Is it America's hardworking people? Is it America steals people's lands? What is being an American? What does that mean? So right now they were battling or just talking about the concept of a black man in this country trying to be an American, which is a complex thing within itself. Because we are all a part of America. See, all of the African heritage, the slaves, you can't separate the slaves from the foundation of this country. You can't. We're already a part of America.
Okay. All right. Now, thank you, Michael. That's very interesting. And maybe we'll take a deeper look into that that definition here on another show later on this week. But right now, you know, as far as a oh, my goodness, as being a mulatto, I'm glad you brought that up, Pianki. For those that don't know, mulatto is a very light-skinned black person, okay? And a lot of times during that period of time, you know, those individuals were considered a part of the, as somebody said, the boule, you know, the higher, they were looked upon as almost being white. So they had a higher status. And also, you know, you really have to think about that. And I thought about a question as I was listening. And could individuals such as Garvey, Douglas, Washington, Du Bois, could they be considered as part of what we call the talented tip during that time? You know, and that goes to show that if they were, there was a difference, and which probably created such how can I put it, separation within the races themselves. But hold on, I have another caller that's been waiting a good 15 minutes, so let me get him on the line also. Okay, my boy Eric Coates, 269, welcome to the show, man. What's been going on? Eric Coates, 269, you there? Becky? Hey. Unmute yourself.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I can hear you.
Yeah, what's going on, man? Yeah, I'm just listening to you guys. Very enlightening. But, you know, from the perspective that I see, if you notice what we quote-unquote call black leaders, to me, if they were not pure Pan-Africanists, and if they weren't clear on that perspective, somewhere down the line, you will see a little quirk in their philosophy or their practice or what it is they stood for. And like with Du Bois, with him ultimately, to me, his move back to Africa was nothing more than a acknowledgement, finally, that it's either Pan-Africanism or death. And so, to me, that's the most important part of his quote-unquote career as it relates to, you know, the liberation of African people. And a lot of the philosophies of integration or looking to find our identity in America, it ends up being a situation where you're marking time, you know, you've better been in the military, where you're marching in place and never getting anywhere. And now, I mean, we have enough history, enough clear history, to see that the most effective political strategy for us at this point in time is pure Pan-Africanism. And like I heard Pianki say, you see that in its totality and its fullest blossom in Marcus Garvey. And you could stack all of them up together and put them next to Marcus Garvey, and they look like children as it relates to what gets us closer to liberation first. So I just wanted to put that point in there. You know, the confusion about whether we're Americans, that clarity is there now, man. So, but I'll mute myself and kind of listen, okay?
All right. Thank you, man. I'm telling you. It's been a long time, but thank you for that knock. What? Go ahead, Michael. You up. Go for it.
Well, I understand what the brother's saying, but I have a problem with Pan-African. Let's get this straight. We understand if an immigrant is born over in another country, comes over here, escapes from that country, they may have dual citizenship. But if you're a black African-American born into America, you're born into this America, for you to become an African citizen, you're going to renounce yourself like Du Bois did. Renounce yourself and go back to Africa. This dual citizenship is not going to work because it's a catch-22. You saying that I hate this country I don't like this country. I want to get away from this country. There's no hope for my family in this country. But you want to have some tie to this country. You want to be able to, because if you have dual citizenship, you want to be able to vote. You want to be able to play the political parties. My sense is if you don't like this country, you don't like the corruption, just renounce yourself. Once you renounce yourself from this country, you will never be able to become American citizens, a citizen again, and you'll never be able to enter this country. That's the rules of the United States. I mean, it is what it is.
Well, that's not
and
true.
Most definitely.
And why Jews, Harry, United States and Israeli citizenship.
But what country are they born in?
Or should I say white?
If a Jewish person is born in America,
whites have Israeli passports and they have United States of America passports.
Now, where was that? Okay, that person that has two passports, where were they born? They weren't born here.
It could have been.
They were born over there and then they came over here. So they were a citizen.
No, I know some that was born here and had both passports.
Okay. They may have, but they did not renounce themselves, because when you renounce yourself, you don't pay taxes. You don't. You're no part of American citizen. That's what Du Bois did. So
the
renunciation. Get away from this.
The renunciation is stipulated based on how this government recognizes you. If the government recognizes both of them, everything is cool. If the government don't recognize either one, then it comes to a point to where you got to renounce one and take on the other.
Right. And I'm just saying it's very important, because when people talk about this, it's very important, because once you renounce yourself as an American citizen, you'll never become one again. That's just the rules of the country.
Well, that's not true. You
can
go through the process of becoming
true.
No, it's not true. You can go through the process of becoming a United States citizen just like anybody else who's not one in the beginning.
Bianchi, if I'm an American citizen and I say I'm renouncing myself as an American citizen and move to another country, once I renounce myself, once I go to that embassy out of country and renounce myself, the United States saying I will never become an American citizen again. That's a fact. Just look it up.
If you owe taxes,
you can't renounce your citizenship.
All right,
so that right there should tell you something.
Hold on, because I think we're getting kind of away from Du Bois, and I want to bring it back, because that's what we want to talk about. Who was just speaking? I know somebody was about to say something. Who's going to hit me up?
Yeah, my mic's still open.
Your mic's still open.
Okay. Yeah, just to quickly clear up some Eric. I think his name is Eric. Said the first thing, and I noticed most African Americans do not have a functional definition of Pan-Africanism. The first thing that pops in their mind when you say Pan-Africanism, that means pack a gym bag and move to Africa. Now, where they get this definition of Pan-Africanism, I don't know, but that's not the definition of Pan-Africanism. So he says he has a problem with Pan-Africanism. I really would like to know what part of Pan-Africanism you have a part with.
I'm going to tell you, the philosophy, this is what I've been hearing. The philosophy about Pan-Africanism is that this country is not for the black man, the taxes and stuff. And then they say we should have our dual citizenship. When you say dual, you say you don't like this country. The country, why you still want to be attached to it in some way? Because it's a contradiction to me. And I know they say dual citizenship. And when I'm just saying, if you have dual citizenship, there's something that you must like about America that you want to hold to. It's just like a girlfriend. If I don't like this girl, I'm not going to have sex with her one day and just say I don't like her and keep going on. No, it's crazy. Either I like her or I don't. Get away from her. If she's not my type of woman,
person.
I'm just renouncing my way. But I wanted
to
say, what do you think about the scientific method he was using?
Mr. Talk, a person can have citizenship in as many countries as he wants. It's your nationality that counts.
Correct.
Mike, you need to learn something before you always want to argue with people.
Yep. So what is my nationality?
No, you go research that yourself. This is
I'm letting you know right now, I was born in America, and this...
Uh-huh. Okay,
no,
thank
I want to stop.
Okay, all right, thank you. All right, Wow. You know.
Wow. Wow.
You know, I see my co-host, this is becoming the Pan-Africanism show. You know what, but I think this is something that we really do need to discuss so we have a better understanding of what Du Bois and Marcus Garvey and those gentlemen back in that time were talking about. Because I think when you hear these names, you hear these phrases, but nobody, as I put in the description, no one really understands what did this mean and what were they talking about. So I do think this is an important part that we do need to really discuss right now as to what does Pan-Africanism mean, and does it necessarily mean that you have to have dual citizenship? Now,
that's their goal. That's their goal, is dual citizenship.
You have Pan-Africanists in the UK. They already citizens of
that's
America.
Correct.
Well, I knew where they want to have citizenship in the United States. Pan-Africanism, at the Dan Gwan Conference, and I forget what year it was, you had people meeting at a Pan-African conference that came from all over the world.
Correct, correct. The brother don't know what Pan-Africanism is, that's the bottom line.
The reason I brought
Pan-Africanism up was because of the end of Du Bois' career, to me, is the, how would you say, the catch-all or the mentality of who he is to wiggle and waggle about him being an intellectual and what papers he wrote while he was in America. You know, it's all fine and good to know all of that, but the phoenix of who he was at the end of his career when he said, hey, look here, this is, out of all that I've been through, this is the approach for us. And so that's why, to me, Pan-Africanism and him goes hand in hand as it relates to that. So that's not changing the subject.
No, right, but I want to be clear. What does Pan-Africanism mean for a black African-American like me? What does it mean? Does it include dual citizenship or not? That's my question.
I've talked
to Pan-Africanism. They always say dual citizenship for us black African-Americans in here.
Okay.
I understand it very well. Well, maybe I don't.
But getting back on Du Bois.
Does it mean dual citizenship for me, sir, as an African-American when Pan-Africanism?
America don't recognize dual citizenship with no other country than Israel and maybe a couple other ones. So, no, they would not recognize it.
My question as a black African American, why are we talking about it then? What do they mean? Do I have to renounce
myself? I have no
myself?
Answer to that question.
I want to get back to the topic of the show,
if Mr. Talker don't mind.
All right. Okay, go ahead. Let's go, P. Yankee.
Now, you know what I was going to make mention of is the sentiment of Du Bois. And, you know, mulatto was really when, at that point in time, it was a classification of meaning that you had African bloodline and quote-unquote European bloodline on the other side. And they had different classifications, as Oklong and Quadrone and so on and so on. But to show the relationship of how you could see the father in this case, because both of their mothers were, you know, quote-unquote black, how the fathers continue to work through them in their opinions. If you look at, go back a little bit further in time, when General Sherman and Secretary of War Stanton had a meeting in Georgia in 1865 in January with some former slaves, and they posed 12 questions to them. And of one of the questions, which was the third, the questions to this group of slaves, which was about 12, they came from different backgrounds, you know, preachers and so forth, you know, like a committee. They asked, state in what manner you think you can take care of yourself and how can you best assist the government in maintaining your freedom? Because Sherman came up with the idea of the 40 acres and the mule. And the answer they gave, and this is very interesting, because here you're talking about people who just came out of slavery and was not too influenced by political wranglers and so forth. The answer they said, the way we can best take care of ourselves is to have land, and turn in and till it by our labor, that is, by the labor of the women and children and old men, and we can soon maintain ourselves and have something to spare. And to assist the government, the young men should enlist in the service of the government and serve in such manner as they may be wanted. So basically, these people coming out of slavery said they didn't want to integrate. They wanted to be amongst themselves. They knew, based on the war, and they didn't say which side, I don't think, but they figured that their people, their young people, had to enlist into the army as they had been doing. But they wanted to maintain, and they wanted land where they could take care of themselves.
Because land is money. Land is resources. We can take that land and make products. See, the land is money. The land is a replenishing of money. That's all we buy with money is natural resources. We take natural resources, make things with. Land is very important. And that's what we don't own
now.
And, you
know, one other thing,
that's why we don't manufacture nothing.
One other thing they went on to say, they said that we want to be placed on land until we are able to buy it and make it our own. Another question, it says, state in what manner you would rather live, whether scattered among the whites or in colonies by yourself. Answer, I would prefer to live by ourselves, for there is prejudice against us in the South that will take years to get over, but I do not know that I can answer for my brother. So there you have it in that particular question. Now, you look off, you know, Du Bois left the NAACP because the NAACP was about integration.
Right.
Whereas Washington said that don't agitate whites, go ahead, basically cash down your bucket where you are. And
it's true.
Gain your skills to start your own businesses and so on and so on and so on. And that was too. Now, Washington and Du Bois had animosity amongst each other, just as Du Bois had animosity toward Marcus Garvey.
Right. And, you know, that's why all this week, we're covering all those cats this week, man. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. We're taking it one day at a time. But, yes, we're going – because all of them relate to each other. And, you know, so we can get the big picture as to what these guys are thinking during their period. And you know, Friday we bring it all together and bring it into the today world and just see how actually their thought process and philosophies are still – in effect to a certain extent today. But let me bring my co-host in, because I know he has a lot more he want to get into. We got 32 minutes left in the live version of the show, and yes, we will be going to overtime, so I'm just letting y'all know now, so you need to get on these phones, 347-838-8622. All right, Hakeem, where you at, man? Bring it to us.
Oh, absolutely. So Du Bois, or Du Bois, however you like to say it, was very critical in his writing towards capitalism. And he criticized often the capitalists and expressed his concerns on how government, capitalists, and even the Supreme Court were kind of in bed together. He was obviously of the view that wealth had more influence and in general was exploiting everyone else, including American Africans or American blacks. This led us into these populist, progressive periods in history where you have the robber barons, the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, you know, these people who are worth tremendous amounts and with deep pockets and very instrumental on the interworkings of government slash capitalist relationships. Now, and even formalizing the policies. Now, along with the exploitation, which is obvious to everyone, he even remarked that when the populist fervor reached a certain peak, that even wealthy influence couldn't stop the need for changes. You get the Supreme Court weighing in on decisions. I think he started to witness the influence of capitalism. He also recognized that politics and economics are fundamentally married. So in order to understand the struggle that blacks faced, it was something you had to be cognizant of. What's interesting is that as we deal with the contemporary struggle of Wall Street today, Du Bois, even at the eve of the 20th century, is writing about the same problem, Both Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois relied heavily on the charitable giving of wealthy individuals. And at the same time, Du Bois was not afraid to write about capitalist dominance and total capture of the American government. I think fundamentally Du Bois was about the working class. That's where his concerns principally lie. And when you talk about the working class, the wage earners, the servants, and the laborers, a good portion of that is going to include American black populace. So even though he received philanthropic support from benefactors, Du Bois still understood the tensions between the haves and the have-nots, particularly when you talk about the chapter in the autobiography. There was an increased amount of strikes in the steel industry, and various forms of strikes were where you see workers uniting, and one of the criticisms of capitalism, particularly the role of government and the Supreme Court even, is that you have these strikers being portrayed as lawless citizens on the verge of possibly of even anarchy. So Du Bois recognized that the federal government could have done more for the cause of the workers, but chose not to in many instances, particularly when you talk about strikes. So he saw the government, the Supreme Court, and big various business representatives in the same fold. The reality of capitalism is that capitalism does create a situation where a person who starts out with nothing or a little, in theory, can become great. And you have these examples of these self-made men and women or so-called self-made men and women during this time period. However, it also relies on a need for a permanent underclass, which includes cheap labor and for the haves to have undue power over the have-nots. As previously noted, Du Bois wanted to have concentration on the workers in all of the media, the power of the elite portraying those who are on strike as a problem. The people who rightfully, by social Darwinism terms, have, if they would just submit to the elite, that they would be able to reap the rewards. To embrace the working class is partially predicated on this racial antagonism, because you have races in similar classes with variations of hues, one's black, one's white. So instead of unifying as the working class, the haves can set the poor white worker against the poor black worker, and the two groups fight amongst each other. The capitalists would then hire the poor black worker to provoke a reaction from the poor white worker. So instead of the poor white worker saying, maybe we should ask the poor black workers to join our union, the response would be, why are these people taking our jobs? But Booker T. Washington's stance at the time seemed, a bit different, and appear to lack any similarities to this level of antagonistic viewpoint. In fact, Du Bois called Booker T. Washington an appeaser. It was the Atlantic Compromise that right. Booker T. Washington pushed. There is nothing about Booker T. Washington on the surface that was antagonistic towards whites. But you have one individual, Booker T. Washington, who growing up in the South, that lives in the South, and you have another person, W.E.B. Du Bois, that is basically a transplant. What impact does that have, on one's philosophy? You have to ask. So it's one thing to talk about the rhetoric that was associated with Du Bois when you are coming from a New England point of view. It's another thing to talk about these things when you are living in Alabama or you're living in Mississippi or Texas or Georgia, just as we can't box in all of Du Bois' views. Booker T. Washington was much more complex than just the surface accommodationalist, I want to say, and there were many things he did behind the scenes in Tuskegee, Alabama, that tried to aid blacks in a generic way. I believe, and I'm saying this in closing, I believe in his environment, he may have felt that the best way to accomplish our goals was to take a stance with the benefactors. He relied on the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, et cetera, for funding. And that led him to, meaning Booker T, that led him to a different place in terms of his goal. So it's right. An interesting dimension between these great individuals and that their ultimate goals were.
Well, you know, you mentioned about Du Bois, how he took on his philosophy. You know, Du Bois coming from Barrington, Massachusetts, which was in the Northeast, a town that every year it sent 10 of its male scholars, academic proficient scholars, to Harvard. And the year that Du Bois would have been eligible to go, they didn't send him. So at that point in time, he began to realize something. And that's how he ended up in Fisk, where in Fisk, on a railroad car, not a railroad car, but a street car, he met, you know, what you would call racism at that time. And you're absolutely right. Booker T. Washington did depend on white philanthropy. Andrew Carnegie played a major part in the formation of Tuskegee by providing the funds. But that's nothing new. Even in modern times, blacks continue to depend on white philanthropy in order to get things done. Even in the civil rights era, it was Stephen Currier and his wife, Audrey Currier, who was the granddaughter of Andrew Mellon, who funded the civil rights movement that provided that money that Malcolm talks about for King and Du Bois to get out of town. So it continues today with the Koch brothers. You hear blacks complaining about that because the Koch brothers want to fund school choice. And then you got the other side who don't want school choice, that is the NEA and the AFT, school unions, and also the NAACP. Those wranglings continue to go on today. I think mainly because blacks are not the same in the United States. They're all different, have different attitudes, different opinions. They only are the same along certain lines, and it's those certain lines that we don't take advantage of. Booker T. Washington did have an inkling to take advantage of that opportunity along those lines. He knew that the unions would not permit blacks to get into them. You had a problem in East St. Louis when blacks was brought out of Cairo, Illinois, into East St. Louis in order to break a strike, and thus the East St. Louis race riot, I believe, in 1919. So things continue.
May I make a say something? You are right, and the environment does have to play. Even scientists say the environment even plays something on our DNA. And it shows that blacks have always been divided philosophically and on their philosophy in this country. And they keep on saying that we were all together back then. No, we had some division, but I want to go to the scientific method. Now, I'm just going to ask a question. Using the scientific method and trying to use that in our social problems, who used the scientific method better? Was it Booker T or was it Du Bois? Did he use the scientific method in handling, you know, his arguments of how blacks should interact with whites? Because having the right of doing something doesn't mean you must do it. You just say you have a right to do it. So sometimes I think when people say I got a right to vote or I have a right to go to any school I want, they must say they must do it. So, I mean, just on your opinion, using the scientific
method. It depends on what the agenda was. The Carnegies were supportive, and the Rockefellers were supportive of Booker T because they didn't like the formation of unions. Unions demanded high pay, which would cut into profits. Unions demanded work rules, safer work rules in the workplace, and so on, which would cut into profits. So capitalists, and I don't have nothing wrong with capitalists. Matter of fact, I like it. I think we need to participate more in capitalism. But organizations, companies try to enlarge their bottom line, and they would do whatever was necessary legally in order to do so. So you've seen that they was willing to support Booker T because he was producing skilled tradespeople.
Mm-hmm. Right, and assembly lines, right. Because during this time, that's when the labor laws came out, during the early 1900s. So it was right around that time, the labor laws and stuff like that, right?
Well, yeah, you can say so.
Right.
But if you know, people look at the and really when you really get to studying Marcus Garvey, then you start being able to put those pictures, the pieces of the puzzle together. And Marcus Garvey has... Go say it. Yes, sir.
And I wasn't going to bring his name up again, but since you did, but to hear it, you know, in social, well, and this is in all sciences, the first element of doing a scientific methodology is recognizing patterns. It's a pattern recognition.
Right. Observation. Right.
Yes, sir. All scientists,
right,
whether they be social or natural, start with the recognition of patterns. The one who used scientific methodology to its greatest extent was Marcus Garvey. And now just very quickly, the reason he was able to do that is because he was able to travel farther around the world and to see blacks in certain conditions more than the others. And so he was the first one who recognized the international pattern of oppression. You know what I said? The international pattern of oppression. And that's how he was able to conclude that Pan-Africanism was the only way. Now, I don't know if somebody, sounds like we got a brother on the phone who's an expert on Du Bois. I don't know what the extent of Du Bois' travel was and how he was, did he know the plight of other blacks in other countries and things of that nature. So if he was not, Du Bois' philosophy, so to speak, had to be looked at from being in the Brother of America.
Same with
the other brothers. Okay, see, same with any other brothers or sisters who only saw the oppression or the condition or the plight of the African American, which once Pan-Africanism is let out the bag, that pales small in scale. It hardly gets you anywhere. And I think that's why you see the minimal progress coming from any of those brother strategies.
I tell you something else. If you look at their acceptance to black women, you know, Du Bois and Monroe Trotter, which was sort of like his consultant at the Niagara Conference, which was held in Canada, they had two of them. Monroe Trotter didn't want black women involved. And they came to some compromise where black women did become involved. If you look at Garvey, for instance, look at the Black Cross nurses. Black Cross nurses came about because, you know, during World War One, they was looking at the battlefield scene, and they would see white nurses step over black soldiers to go tend to white soldiers.
Wow.
And at that point, they said, we need to have our own nurses.
Wow.
You know, I can't think of it. I think it was General Pershing. General Pershing, it was the Du Bois group that petitioned the army to put blacks on the front line.
Wow. All
General
right,
Pershing made the statement. Wait, real quick. General Pershing at the time made the statement that, you know, this will not change your lot, L-O-T, lot in society, by putting you on the front line. So you always had these two sides within black population, quote unquote. I'm using black because it wasn't called black then; it was called colored, and Negro, and so on. But you always have had these pull one direction, pull the other direction.
Well, and now we're debating whether women should be on the front lines. And I understand that philosophy, because if you can say someone be on the front lines, you can say African Americans had just.
Hold up! We're not going there. All right.
Oh, okay.
I see where it was headed to, and we're not going.
No,
hold on.
Okay.
I got you, Mike. I got you. All right, let me bring Beasley in and see what he has to add to the conversation. Also, we have 15 minutes left in the live version of the show. We will be going in overtime. So if you want to continue to hear the show live, get on the phones, y'all, 347-838-8622. All right. Or you can stay in the chat room. You won't be able to hear live, but you can watch the conversation. H2O, if you're there, can you put the link in so everybody can switch over so they won't get kicked out of the chat room? Thank you. All right. Go ahead, Easley. You up.
I'm enjoying listening to what Pianchi has to say. He has a lot of knowledge, and he's using some, you know, common sense. You know, when I hear people speak of black folks as one monolithic group that have the same desires and needs, and it's just not true. It's just not true. And Pianchi's speaking to that. And I think Booker T. Washington and Du Bois had valid points, and they both had a plan. They both had a plan. Of course, you know, most people, well, I guess these days they would tend to agree with Du Bois, but Booker T. Washington, you know, he has his place. And it probably might have been a more practical place, considering that America was, you know, mostly rural, and a lot of work was done out there, you know, in the farms and in the fields. It was probably more practical for someone to work with their hands and learn a trade than it was to be trying to go to, you know, higher institutions of learning. That's all. I mean, we honored Du Bois, but, I mean, the NAACP was started with help from outside money. And there's some concern and talk that he was a member of the Boulé, which is the elite of the elite, blacks that cooperated and corroborated with the white power structure, that didn't really care as much about black people as they claimed. And there's some that believe that, and help the power structure, help the status quo stay the way that it was.
And, you know, interesting that you bring it up, Beasley, because we can take, you know, I mentioned about the mulatto, but you also think about the paper bag test. A black person,
well,
whose
that's
skin
real
was lighter. Yeah. And guess what else, too? No, it kind of skips my mind. But those things were very, people have to look at the things that was going on in society, look at the sentiment that people have, and you can kind of better understand exactly what. And the NAACP was an integrationist organization.
Right.
At that time. Matter of fact, and also, and one of the reasons they got rid of Du Bois, because what Du Bois said, that they was coming up with policies that would cause blacks to have dependence on whites. They accused Du Bois of being a communist because he did travel to China, and I think he traveled to another communist country. But see, the Communist Party looked at the plight of blacks. It was the Communist Party who defended the Scottsboro Nine Boys. The NAACP would not even take up the case to provide lawyers for it.
You know,
well, you said he was against capitalism, so, you know. If you're against capitalism, they call you a communist. That's the first thing,
yeah,
you're
right.
Socialist.
Well, when you see the majority of your people at the bottom, then how can you think capitalism works for your people? And if there's another system, you would think of another system. I mean, it's only natural for people on the bottom to embrace a different system.
And, you know, I want to also mention, before that time period in the late 1890s, you had Collie House, my name was Collie Guy, who formed the Ex-Slave Mutual Benefit and Pension Fund. And she was lobbying for reparations for ex-slaves in the form of a pension. You know, you had these ex-slaves who fought in the Civil War, and
right,
they were, some of them were disabled and injured, and they didn't have nothing. Now, check this out. Her membership in that organization was upwards of 400,000.
A lot of people.
Across the country. And one of the ways that they brought her down was the Postmaster General, because the only means of communication then was through letters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every letter that after they went on to some point, I think they made her serve a year and a day in prison. You know, a year and a day was typical. Jack Johnson served a year and a day, and so on and so on and so on. But she had a movement over 400,000. When they locked her up, her organization continued on for a little while, but what came along after her was Marcus Garvey, the UNIA. And much of her organization went into the UNIA. They say that Marcus Garvey's organization was about 250,000. When the UNIA began to flounder, what came next was the Nation of Islam. And many UNIA members, you know, portrayed over into the Nation of Islam during the time of Elijah Muhammad.
So what you're saying is that after these organizations were wrecked and destroyed, new organizations propped up that were more radicalized.
On the same philosophy.
Views.
On right. the same well,
do,
views.
Do for self.
You know what
do
that view
self.
Was? Right. You're absolutely right. Do for yourself.
Do for
that
self.
Well, can
do
we go
self.
Back again? I mean, speaking about our history and how black people are, I'm talking about overall for blacks in a whole community. Living in this America with a capitalist society, can it ever, as a whole, better the black community in this nation? As a whole. I'm not talking about the 10%. But in this capitalist society where you have the foundation of this country was unbalanced, I mean, how can, you know,
well,
at
the
home
10%,
we move up?
Because
we still made battle battles on jobs and getting jobs. That's why we may have it from Ashton, because people will go ahead and hire their brothers and nieces that's less skilled from you. You have a degree. There's a lot of stuff in this capitalist society. So as an overall whole, can we? How do
not
we look?
Easy, but too many others have done it and showed that it could be done.
Right. Yeah, I know that. I'm talking about in a capitalist society, only the small percent. Let's say the 10% of the black are wealthy. What about the 90%? Could that 90%?
That's because
ever,
they're the one. They're the right. one who. They're the one who puts the businesses together.
Yeah.
Right.
And even if not getting wealthy, you can live a decent lifestyle with a decent job.
Now, and particularly here in America, really the answer to your question, brother, is no at this point. That's the straightforward answer. Now, if you want somebody to bullshit your job, the answer is no, and I'll tell you why. One, you're talking about a European expansion, right? So now, within the capitalist system, the poor will always be there. But because you are a subject in this capitalist society, you're not even considered the poor. That's why you always hear black folks say, when white folk get pneumonia, you're on your deathbed. Okay, so now the only way, now in Marcus, again, Marcus Garvey, he said, the only way you see a strong African anywhere on the planet, you must see Africa rebuilt and strong, made by Africans. Again, this is profound shit, man. So if you say, well, look here in America, we practiced capitalism, okay. The time frame when we did possibly the best, when you had the push of black-owned business, it actually was in the 1800s when blacks were doing the best economically. You had the rise of black banks and the inswell of black entrepreneurship. Now, the question is, will you see that again in America? The rise of black banks, the rebuilding of the entrepreneurial spirit, and unless somebody has a formula, I'm saying you won't see that again here in America. If you don't see that again in America, the answer to your question, brother, is no. It's just that simple.
Well, blacks have had millionaires. As a matter of fact, the first one, on record, was out there in Beasley's neighborhood in San Francisco in 1810. A guy by the name of William Leisdorff, Leisdorff.
What did you
blacks
do?
Blacks have always been in business. He was, matter of fact, he was a city treasurer in San Francisco.
Really?
I've been telling you more about
you.
We only got 35,000 black million.
There's a lot of well-to-do black people in Los Angeles. Black people in Los Angeles that are generationally, that have generational money.
Right.
There's you had black billionaires during the height of slavery, before 1865.
Okay, right, but we make a tenth of the problem. Okay.
The man that started Family Savings, which was the largest black bank in the country for years before they merged with Founders and these other banks, his name was Earl Grant, Mr. Grant. And Mr. Grant was a pig farmer out in Pasadena. And, First, he was a garbage man, which means he started an independent garbage business, and he would cart people's garbage off, and he would throw it into a dump. And he bought the dump, and he started feeding his pigs with it. And he tried to borrow some money from the bank, and they wouldn't let him, so he started his own bank. So we're talking about a garbage man and a pig farmer. And he did all, and then they wouldn't loan him any money, so he got his own money. I'm going to see if I can Google him, because I'm sure he's somewhere.
Hold on. I got somebody else that wants to come in. Hold on. Let me bring him in. Bring him in. All right. Area code 813. Welcome to the show. Who do I have here?
Florida.
Yeah, I know who it is. Hello. Sister Ngoni, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. It's quite an interesting dialogue you have going here, and I just wanted to chime in real quick because of the topic of the rise of black banks. I was wondering, could that be because that was during an era when the society was in expansion? And I think what we fail to recognize today, Marcus Garvey's statement was true, that, Africa had to be freed in order for African people, no matter where they were on the earth, would ever be free. However, today we have the southern border now is open because we no longer live in a capitalist society. We live in the North American Union. There's no border patrol. That's being reported on right now. People can go look that up. I'm not making it up. It's not a conspiracy theory. There are actually literally people from South America coming in riding on top of trains like you see in Africa. They're doing that right now. And the border patrol, the few people agents that they have there, are giving them vouchers for bus tickets to go into the interior of the country. Now, also, with Africa, the African Union gets 65% of their funding from the EU. And you got AFRICOM crawling all over Africa, training the young men for what? I don't know. Probably to kill each other. So, I mean, I don't want to be defeatist. I would like to think we have some hope, but I don't think we're going to get there using models from the 1800s because the world has severely changed since then. The ground under your feet is changing while we're having this conversation because the North American Union, when they talked about it under Bush, and it came to light, the mainstream news reported on it. You heard about the Amero and all that. Then it kind of went hush, hush, hush. But these people don't stop working on their plan. They're always 50 to 75 years or more ahead of us. So now you got your Trans-Pacific partnerships and your private and public partnerships. All those things are in place now. And these people are coming in here by the tens of thousands, and I'm not exaggerating. Why are they bringing them in? Tens of thousands when you have homeless veterans and 22 of them committing suicide every day, but they're housing tens of thousands of immigrants from South America at the tune of $2 billion, our dime, at Langley Air Force Base. So I just wanted to put that in the pot.
Doing that for political reasons, the reproduction rate of white Americans, same thing going on in Europe, some European country where the reproduction rate is like down to 1.75. So
right,
they're doing that for political reasons to make some of those states that's red turn blue, and that's Democratic politics there.
Well, that's correct, but that was a rhetorical question. They're doing it definitely for political reasons because all those people will be dependent on the government, and when they're told to vote a certain way, what they're trying to do is get rid of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights because they want a dictation. This is, like I said, the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto have been in place for decades. That's where we are.
I want to ask Bianchi a question at the offense.
Can I throw something in there real quick, brother?
Go ahead, Mishka, man.
A couple things, sis. One, the rise of the black banks was due in part to, had nothing to do with the expansion of America. It had to do with the brothers. I forget which fraternities, but the rise of the black banks came from the organization of money through insurance companies that the blacks had started. And they were expanding so fast, they were taking it nationwide. So what they were doing was organizing it. In other words, there wasn't anything in particular happening in America that helped the rise of the black banks. I wanted to make that point. The second point was, see, when you're talking about another man's society, and you're correct, societies don't stand still. But when you're talking about America, you're not talking about us. In other words, what's those two guys used to watch movies and then criticize them? You know, that's what we do when we talk American politics, particularly blacks. These are not our politics.
Yeah, come on.
Let me finish. And if what I said moved the nerve in you, just let me finish. The only thing that's changing now is that the next frontier of technology and the moving of humanity forward is the continent, and we the only damn people don't know it. America is not even developing America anymore. They're in Africa. Chinese are not even developing China anymore. They're in Africa. Now, the we're only wackos, we are not in Africa. And that's what I wanted to say.
Wow.
Well, the point I was trying to make, brother, and I'm not into partisan politics either, but the point I was trying to make when I said that the black banks arose during a time of expansion is because they were allowed to rise, just like Oprah Winfrey was allowed to rise. See, I'm not taking anything away from what the brothers did, but the proof of what I'm saying is that about every 75 to 100 years, they overturned everything we accomplished. So that shows you it was done in a time when they allowed it to happen because of the expansion. And now they're taking America down, and they, like you said, in Africa, where all the resources are, that's how it goes. They move from one part of the earth to the other. They rose up the Soviet Union. They took it down. They rose up Great Britain. They said the sun never set on it, but they took it down. They raised up America. Now they're taking it down. Now they're going to go over there and wipe out as many people they can off the continent and take over what they can.
Who is that?
That's how I see it. Just
who
my
is they responsible
yeah,
for all this?
We always got these mysterious people. But
I want to ask Bianchi a question, though, about Booker
Du
Bois.
That could just be the natural progression of things.
What do you think about Du Bois, Bianchi, telling blacks that they should leave the Republican Party and go to the Democratic Party? What do you think about his philosophy on that?
Blacks voted for William Taft during the time of Du Bois. Blacks liked the Republican Party because they believed, based on Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, and they did not understand it. That's another reason why Du Bois talked about some certain people should be allowed to vote. You know, it's very interesting.
Okay.
Well, and the hardest core racists were in the South, and they were all Democrats.
And that's another
study.
You got to understand why come people could go all the way out into San Francisco and be more successful than they could in the Deep South. And that's a whole different.
It was wide open in the West.
Well, why is that? Because
it was
Republicans.
Wide open in the West.
So, I mean, according to you, you think it was a bad – because I hear you thinking that blacks were Republicans and, you know – so what do you think about that?
Du Bois – remember, Du Bois was a member of the NAACP, and he was a publisher of the Crisis Magazine. And it was through the Crisis Magazine, NAACP, that came a lot of anti-lynching proponents. The Republicans had promised blacks a lot of things, you know, coming out of the 1800s and so on and so on and so on. But as time went by, the things that they proposed for blacks, you know, every 4 years, it would be less and less on their platform. And Du Bois could see that. So Republicans were just using blacks just like Democrats use blacks today.
Thank you. And that's a very good
point.
So
on both sides, we messed up. So whether we're Democrat or Republican, we still messed up.
Well, it depends on how you use the power.
Okay.
I mean, you can use the power on a local level, but on a state level, one place you can.
Yeah. Hold on. All right, I got to let my co-host get in here because he's got to get up out of here, and I want him to get his last words in. So, Hakeem, where you at, man? Talk to me.
Oh, yeah. Here I am. Oh, man, I enjoyed all the various perspectives, all the contributors. I learned a lot today, and I wanted to wish everybody a joyous and peaceful remainder of the day, and I'll be chatting with everybody tomorrow, same time, same channel.
All right. Thank you, sir. And you have a good one. Also, I'm bringing two other callers in real fast.
Yeah, you make sure you do that. No, put it over there. Yeah, that's what I did. Put it over
Mike, mute yourself. All right, let me bring Maze and hold on. My bad. Wrong person. Let me bring Maze and Julian. All right. Welcome to the show.
Let me ask you a question. When everybody says about history, because every 50 years history changes. And then you have and people that's not ready for it, they're just going to be in the loop of lostness. Those that's ready is prepared for it. And also when the Republicans was when black people were Republicans and Ronald Reagan was a Democrat and everything changed over because of the way the laws were. That's why the black people in the South left the Republican Party because of what we see now was happening to you. And both parties are the same now. So you can see one switch from one party into another, and they both have the same idea.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And Mr. Talk, can I
That was lovely.
Yes. Who's talking? Yes,
that's Michigan.
Yes,
go ahead. Just very quickly, bro. Very quickly. The use
what
of politics.
What the hell?
The use of politics. You're simply talking about a tool. And like Bianca said, you shouldn't be beholden to any particular European party. You're using for your interests. That's what everybody else does. Now, there are two things. There's a book, Black Power by Kwame Ture and Charles D. Hamilton. If you read that book, you get a good idea of how using either political party for your specific reasons can work. The other thing is back in the 1800s, if you want to see some blacks who played the political power, who pimped European political parties, just study their time frame. Now, if you have no infrastructure, if you have no national platform, you don't have no damn business in politics, right? In other words, you have to have an agenda to play in European politics. What is
Hello?
The black agenda?
Hello?
Are you right?
If you have
if
no
you
black
skid,
agenda,
if you want
to
Skid Row
in
your vote,
game?
You need to get your ass off of Skid Row.
Thanks. In other words, when they had one black people Republicans, they had power. And when they got everything taken away from them, they lost their power when everything was taken from them. Because they had power, they had congressmen and everything else that we see today. It wasn't looking like we see the Congress now.
Well, what it really happened with the divide of the parties happened was leading up into 1968 when Wallace broke away and started and had his own independent party and made a run for the presidency. And that's when the hardcore racists that wanted segregation, wanted things to stay the way they were, that's when they bailed out of the Democratic Party. They were independents with Wallace, and then they became Republicans.
They were Dixiecrats.
Those were Dixiecrats, exactly. The 1968 election. They were tired, and they bailed out on Johnson because he pushed through the civil rights. And then they couldn't deal with Humphrey because Humphrey was, playing his game and speaking to what he thought that the black people wanted to hear as well. But, you know, politics without any economics behind it, you know, I do believe that you all offend Beasley when you do nothing but complain. And I got a question.
We
who
do
is
what we?
We?
Freedom of speech.
Man, get him.
No, Maze, you let me talk now. Just do whatever you do.
Yeah,
who is
talking
we?
About history.
No, I'm talking now, Maze. Try to be quiet. You'll learn something.
You know what? Since y'all want to have y'all personal conversation, y'all can do that in the green room. All right. Anyway.
Go ahead.
Okay. You know what? And I think, Beasley, you made a good point. And Michigan, you know, that what Michigan was trying to say, I think. And if you bring it all around back to where we started at with W.E.D. Du Bois, basically that's what he was saying. You know, you got to have the money to make anything work, I think. It's interesting, you know, that we had to go all the way around, but if you follow the trail that we led, we had, it just came all the way back around to the thing that everything, resources, and having the ability to step out and take charge, you know, get, as Beasley say, get off Skid Row. But then again, you know, Sister Ngoni brought up some good points too. You know, things are really getting to the point now to where there are no borders anymore. I know here in Texas things are just going crazy, but I don't know. I think W.E.D. Du Bois had a point. Had a point when he said we started talking about the talented 10. All right, who's got the traffic? Somebody in a car or something? It's killing me.
You know what else is possible that they mentioned about that? I never have been able to trace it down. Somebody said that Du Bois said that it's good for blacks to mix with whites because you make a stronger person. Now, I haven't been able to find that. Maybe Brother Cloud can research that. But, you know, that's...
Well, no, we talked about that earlier. We talked about that earlier because Booker T. Washington says you don't have to get on to whites. You don't have to necessarily go to their school. Right, but I'm saying, well, segregation, it's still the same thing. It's still integrating.
Du Bois was a miscegenated person himself.
Yes, he was. Right. Well, actually, Washington was too. So, miscegenation... And you're right, the word miscegenation would have been used then back at that time. But I'm
far
not
better,
I
it's
just,
a far better word than mulatto. Mulatto applies to donkeys. That's where it comes from.
Well, you know, our present president is from the same.
He's not a mulatto. He's a biracial person.
All these terminologies are damning. How do you describe that person? He describes himself as a black man.
If we discuss in Du Bois' time, let's use the word the way they would have used it back then.
That was 100 years ago.
We're talking about that period in history, though.
Right, but we're talking period in history in 2014. You could use whatever terms you like, though.
The history is the things that went on back then, you know, determines a lot of what we going to experience in today. You have to wonder why come such sentiments still exist down in the South.
Yeah.
And blacks have numeric power in the South. If you look at some of those counties, Alabama, you got Dallas County that's like 75% black. You got, I think, Greene County, Lawndes County. So Mississippi, you got some counties that's damn near 90% black. So those economic markets that I still contend, looking at taking a part out of Booker T. Washington, those economic markets that need to be controlled.
De facto segregation.
Yeah, but who's controlling it, though? See, that's the thing. You know, it looks one thing on the surface, but you get down deep, it's something totally different. You know what I mean? Once you start digging
well,
in.
The bottom line is, if you don't have the ability to employ your people, you ain't got no damn power in a capitalist society. So if you're in a situation where blacks are not manufacturing any particular products, and you can't name five black employers who employ over 50 black people, what power are you talking about?
Those employers do exist.
Yeah, and that's the type of, I mean, everybody's looking at developing, underdevelopment countries because underdevelopment countries has a potential to become developed countries. And I'm going to mention one other thing.
You can also exploit the cheap labor.
Right. That's an excellent point because you could create middle classes in China. You could create middle classes in South Korea. You know, 35 years ago,
and now that is the heart of Pan-Africanism. It's not about where your body is. It's about where your energy, your time, your politics, and your understanding is. And that's what I mean, and it should be on Africa. It's the new frontier. It's the place where manufacturing is about to boom, technology, things of this nature. The relationship that we have with Africa and the continent.
Ain't nothing new about development in Africa. Africa's been exploited for over 500 years.
Okay.
Let me just deal with that. Africa's been raped and pillaged and exploited for 500 years.
I said that's where the next frontier is in Africa. Now,
it's too hot over there, and they got mosquitoes. Yeah. I'm staying right here in California.
Yeah, see now, you see this misunderstanding that say now you can bear witness here. I don't have to be able to move to Africa.
Listen up.
We're gonna get into an argument. Everybody make their opinion.
I just wanted Eric to bear witness to another person who doesn't know what Pan-Africanism is.
I know exactly what Pan-Africanism is.
I know
who Kwame Nkrumah is. I knew when you said Kwame Ture that that's Stokely Carmichael. Don't dare insult me.
I don't know what the definition of Pan-Africanism is. I never asked you to move to Africa, but that's the first thing that came out of your mouth.
Right. You know so much and have so little. That's why you complain.
First of all, you don't know what I have.
All right, Hold on. We're not even going that route right now. I don't know. I left for a hot minute, came back, and y'all. No, we're not doing that. All right. So that means I must have got a little heated. All right. So you know what? It's 4:15. Hey, y'all know I bowl on Tuesdays. I got to go, but I'm gonna let y'all get y'all last word in as always. You know, and I'm gonna start with the lady, Sister Ngoni. Your last words, my dear friend.
Oh, yes, sir. Well, I wanted to answer Mr. Beasley's question, who are these mysterious they? They are the elites that have ruled this planet from time immemorial. And I want to compliment your co-host. I'm sorry, I forgot again, and he's already gone. I want to acknowledge him. And I want to say something quickly about sacrifice zones. You're talking about building and development in Detroit right now. Over 500 families, they're turning their water off. And you got Trenton, New Jersey, you got Benton Harbor, Michigan, Cleveland, places like that, where a large population of black people are. And so, we can't solve the problems of today with the ideas of yesterday. Great show, Mr. Talk. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you. You have a great one also. And I think that was Jew who said who was we, but I'm not sure. Okay. But next we're going to bring Mr. Beasley in. Mr. Beasley, your final words.
You know, when I hear people talk about black people don't know this and we have nothing, I think they're projecting what their life experience is. I grew up different. I've been around different type of people. I've been around movers, shakers, and go-getters when I was a kid and as an adult. And there ain't no damn excuses out here. You know, when people are worried about, you know, it starts with yourself. Make something of yourself.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. Is that it?
That's enough.
All right. And let me bring Mr. Michigan in. Man, what's going on? You up?
Yes, sir. Good show, Beth. Yeah, I'll just say, everybody, you know, has good points, and I think everything should be taken into context. As for me, it's Pan-Africanism or die. I think that's the only strategy. It's neither old nor new. It's scientific, and it's the only way out for us. Peace.
All right. Thank you, brother. You have a good one. Hope to hear from you tomorrow. All right. Last but not least, Mr. P. Yankee is in the house. P. Yankee.
Yeah, as I always say, I like the people to contribute to the topic of the program, not get into arguments, not who know more than others. It's the fact that some people come from different backgrounds and able to bring different perspectives to the conversation. But I wanted to mention one other thing, too. And Goni was talking about the immigrants. After the World War II, Mexican Americans, this country had a policy of expelling Mexicans, even those that were born here under the 14th Amendment. So this country has always come up with surprises, and to expel American citizens back into Mexico, which this program lasts up into the 1950s, I think it was over 5 million of them there was, is very, very interesting. It needs to be studied. And see what it was that was going on at that time, because, you know, if an end-around play works once, the team is going to try it again and again and again and again, as long as it continues working. Why would you change?
All right. That's it. All right. Thank you, sir. I do appreciate your comments and your contributions today. All right, man, another outstanding show. And today we were just talking about Marcus Garvey, man. We just getting started. Tomorrow we got Booker T. Washington up on stage. So we can dissect and discuss and find out what's going on with him and his philosophy and things of that nature. Man, I'm telling you, you know, I agree with you. You know, everybody, and I think I say this at the beginning of each show, everyone has a different opinion, and we're not going to agree. We are not going to agree with each other. That's a known fact. So we should, as adults, be able to hold conversations, even we don't agree, without, you know, becoming upset. I'm just going to use the word upset. You know, talk shows aren't the ones where you, if you wear your feelings on your sleeve, this is not the format that you need to be participating in. And that's for sure. As I said also at the beginning of the show, you know, if you come to play games, this is not the game room. All right. Game room comes on about 9-10 o'clock later on the night sometime. But this ain't the game room. But overall, Marcus Garvey was a very, like I say, complex man, you know, we often hear things like the NAACP. We often hear things about Pan-Africanism, and it's good to be able to actually discuss these things and get some type of definition or direction as to what these things meant. And who were these people who were talking about it and encouraging or discouraging it? You know, it's always a good thing. And we always say, hey, let's educate. Well, we have to educate ourselves first. If this is the way of doing it, hey, I'm all for it. You know, because regardless of what anyone believes about the other person today that called in on the show, I can take a little bit of what everyone said and I am better for it right now because I have learned something from each and every one. And that's what it's all about. Believe it or not, you have furthered your education. Now, how you look at it, that depends on you. But believe it or not, you have furthered your education. I know that's a back around the world way of saying it, but oh, yeah. You got it like that. All right, so I'm going to get up out of here, man. I want to say thank y'all for participating, everybody who listened on the phone, who was in the chat room, everybody out there listening on your different devices, thank you, because I do appreciate it. My co-host had to leave earlier today. I want to thank him for being here also with his extensive knowledge. And don't forget tomorrow, y'all, we have Booker T. Washington up next. I'm telling you, man, I'm loving this week. All right, so without any further ado, if you have any comments or anything, you can send them to ericletstalk@gmail.com. You can Facebook me, Let's Talk with Eric Jackson @facebook.com, and I am on Twitter, Driven4FRLife62 at Twitter. Okay, so those are all the ways you can kind of, or you can just leave me a message here on Ball Talk Radio, and I'll check it out. All right, so other than that, that's it, y'all. Just remember, keep smiling, show appreciation, forgive with open heart, but make sure you're forgiving yourself first before you forgive anyone else. And the biggest and best thing, learn to laugh at yourself. Because if you can laugh at yourself, man, everything else is gravy. All right? So, till tomorrow, y'all have a good one, man. We're going to leave y'all with some Fresh Prince in Summertime. See y'all tomorrow. Have fun.
Drum. break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme, and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime. Checking out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly, we be out in the park. A place called the Plateau is where everybody goes. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise. Honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turned around to see what you beeping at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hip you and to get you equipped for the summertime. Yet, hustle to the mall to get me a short set. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair, cause basketball courts in the summer got girls there. The temperature's about 88. Hop in the water plug, just for old time's sake. Break to your crib, change your clothes once more, cause you're invited to a barbecue to start at 4. Sitting with your friends as y'all reminisce about the days growing up and the first person you kissed. And as I think back, makes me wonder how the smell from a grill can spark off nostalgia. All the kids playing out front, little boys messing around with the girls playing double dutch, while the DJ spinning a tune as the old folks dance at your family reunion. Then 6 o'clock rolls around, you just finished wiping your car down. It's time to cruise, so you go to the summertime hangout. It looks like a car show. Everybody come looking real fine, fresh from the barbershop or fly from the beauty salon. Every moment frontin' and maxin', chillin' in the car, they spend all day waxin', leanin' to the side, but you can't speed through 2 miles an hour, so everybody sees you. There's an air of love and of happiness, and this is the Fresh Prince's new definition of summer madness.
Bye.